One of the things that I would like to do is talk about music from the point of view of what you hear as a listener. In other words, when you go to concerts or when you turn on your radio or your stereo or whatever it might be, what is it that you're hearing? And we will start with some very basic concepts of music, talking a little bit about meter, beat, and some aspects of melody and things like that. But let me make one thing very clear. This is not going to be a technical course. We're not going to, you know, this is not a music theory course. I could give you a lot of fancy terminology so that I don't know what good it would be, but I guess this being Washington, the next time you're at a dinner party or something, you could turn to the person next to you and say, can you tell me about the resolution of a dominant seventh chord? Or if someone asks you that, then you could answer that question. But really, some of these things are good to know, and there will be some terminology and some vocabulary, because I think in order to understand something musically, if you have some sort of sense of what the terms mean and have a vocabulary to talk about these things, then it makes more sense. Also, it makes it easier for us. We can communicate. So tonight will be, a good part of tonight at least, we'll be going over some fundamentals of that sort, going over some basics. And as the description in the brochure indicated, we're going to focus on music in the classic and romantic eras. Now, fortunately, that means a good bit of the music that you hear at concerts. In fact, I don't have any statistics, and I couldn't tell you what the National Symphony plays, but my guess is that a very, very hefty percentage of the pieces that, for instance, the National Symphony plays comes from these two particular time periods. I thought I might first start off by doing a quick run-through of the different musical periods in Western musical history. And I might add that we will be focusing on, of course, Western music and mostly Western art music. Although that's kind of a misnomer, because if we're talking about Mozart, and we will be talking about Mozart, if you go back to Mozart's time, the distinction that we make, or at least some people in our culture make, between classical music and all other kinds, or whatever it might be, classical music and popular music, however you want to describe it, those are distinctions that are mostly a product of the 19th century. In Mozart's time, that kind of distinction, as we think about it today, simply didn't exist. For instance, some of the arias from Mozart's operas were the hit tunes of the day. You have to look at it that way. But we will be talking about what I think most people think of as art music. When we talk about these two periods, and I stress the fact of Western music, because we no longer live in such a Western-centric culture that we think that ours is the only culture. There are many other musics throughout the world, and many other cultures have developed rather sophisticated musical languages, but we will mostly talk about Western ones. And give you some rough time frames, and these time frames are very, very rough. I might add. We can go back how far? Well, we could literally go back to the cooling of the earth, but we won't start that far back. We could go back, if we go back to antiquity, that is the ancient Greeks, ancient Egyptians, and so forth, they certainly had music. They wrote a lot about music, and we can read all of these treatises by Aristotle and other people about it, but we don't know much about the music itself. Not much has survived. So in our Western culture, the heritage basically begins with the Middle Ages. And I'll just abbreviate it here. In musical terms, now keep in mind that these dates are very, very rough. And in other areas, the dates may differ. But roughly from somewhere around 500 AD to around 1400 AD, We call most music from that time period medieval. Now, up until about a year or so ago, practically no one ever heard of that music unless you were an early music aficionado and specifically was into it. But what's happened in the last year, you've probably become very familiar with certain music from the Middle Ages, and that's, of course, Gregorian chant, right? That's become, to everyone's amazement, sort of one of the really hot items in music these days. It amazes me. You walk into Tower Records and there are bins and bins now of Gregorian chant, and think about 2 years ago, how often would you have seen that then? But there was, of course, a great deal of other music, some early polyphony and so forth. Most of it was vocal. And then we have the Renaissance, which I can never spell when I'm at the board. I always have to get about 10 feet back to see what I've written, whether it's spelled right or not. So please forgive me if I'm not spelling this right. Which goes from a 1400 to approximately 1600. Here it's, again, mostly vocal music that you hear. And it's a lot of polyphony. Composers such as, who wrote church music, such as Palestrina, a lot of early Protestant music, such as a lot of hymns and chorales and things like that. And one area that you may be familiar with, you may from school, if you're in high school or college, you sang in any sort of choral group or something like that, you may have sung madrigals. Most madrigals come from this particular time. And once we get to the Baroque, towards the end of the Baroque, we begin to get into a time frame that's more familiar to concert goers. Now, the Baroque runs from roughly 1600 to somewhere in the middle of the 18th century. I'm going to say 1750. This is a very arbitrary number. Baroque music is characterized by, first of all, the invention of a brand new type of music, opera. That's when opera begins to appear. And towards the end of the Baroque, if you think about, you know, if I were to say, well, who are Baroque composers that you've heard of? You've certainly heard of several. Most of them are composers that are in the last 50 years or so. Bach, Handel, Vivaldi would probably be three names that immediately come to mind. These are Baroque composers, and they're all early 18th century composers. And then we get to the first period that we will be paying or dealing with in any detail, and that's the Classic Era. I like to use the term Classic Era as opposed to Classical Era or Classical Period, just because the word classical has other meanings, you know, when we talk about classical music in a general sense. And so that's the reason I call it classic. Now, when did the Classic Period begin? Well, sometimes we say 1750, but between us, it really didn't get started with the music that we know it until sometime in the 1770s, but at least we know that. When did it end? That is one of the major, major questions. By the way, the principal classic era composers, and the ones that we'll be talking about, are Haydn and Mozart, and at least part of Beethoven, early Beethoven. Early Beethoven is very much a classic composer. Later Beethoven is not so much. So sometime during Beethoven's lifetime, we see Beethoven as a transitional figure, the classic era ends. And Beethoven lived until 1827, but by about 1810 or 15, something like that, he was writing very, very different music. I think I can say with some comfort that no one really can date the end of the classic period with any specificity. And the reason I can say that with some comfort is because one of the books that Kim mentioned that I wrote, which was on Beethoven, that was one of the main points of the book. I spent 300 pages and I still couldn't come to an answer. So I probably won't be able to tonight. Let's put it that way. And then we get into the Romantic period after that, which is most of the 19th century. Again, from whenever you want to start this, Again, it's not easy to date the end of it. It didn't exactly end right in 1900. Some people say, well, it sort of lasted up until the First World War. Some people say, well, no, a little by even earlier, it was mostly over. But we can make it nice and neat because we can call then we can say we have 20th century music. Notice I don't say contemporary. It always amuses me when people trot out things like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and refer to this as contemporary. Well, it's 20th century, but for God's sake, it was written in 1913. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about something that's almost 80 years old. But after that, we do get into the 20th century. Now, we won't deal too much with that. We'll deal mostly with this time. And I might also add that the main part of the Romantic period is really up until about 1860 or so. Most of the composers that we associate with Romanticism had written most of what they were going to write by then. There are some exceptions. Brahms is a great exception, and then there are the late Romantic nationalistic composers such as Tchaikovsky and Dvorak. But if you think about most composers, certainly Schubert, Schumann, most of Liszt, a good bit of Wagner, Mendelssohn, Chopin, all of these composers were really writing Schumann, I mentioned Schumann, writing in mostly the first part or up until about 1860. So that's what we're going to deal with. Now it just so happens that really starting with the tail end of the Baroque and you catch a little Bach and Handel, but mostly in the classic and romantic periods, this is where the core of the concert repertory, not just for symphonies, but for other kinds of concerts comes from. The big exception, of course, would be the 20th century. We're hearing more and more 20th century works. And some younger composers are writing some pretty exciting things, I think. So don't run away from 20th century music. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on just in the last decade or so. I just wanted to do that so you could place everything in some sort of time frame and give you a rough overview.